You're with Michael Parker on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. This is Michael Parker, and this is Deprogram coming to you on TNT Radio Network. Based out of Australia, yet I am in Los Angeles, California, and wherever you are on the globe, I wish you a good day or a good evening or a good middle of the night, whatever it is for you. If you are listening to me right now and you hear this transmission, I thank you and I appreciate you. We will be joined in just a moment with Alicia Cashman. We're going to be discussing Lyme disease and get deep into that subject. Later in the day, we'll be speaking with Mitchell Gerber about the Falun Gong. And finally, in the third hour, we'll be speaking with Jeff Runyon, who is a wealth and capital management advisor. But first off, let me just do this one little news story. And you already got tipped off to it a little bit earlier, a few minutes ago, but this thing in Canada, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau announced on Monday that his government will introduce new legislation to implement, quote, a national freeze on handgun ownership and prevent people from buying and selling handguns anywhere in the country. He said, the day this legislation goes into effect, it will no longer be possible to buy, sell, transfer, or import handguns into Canada, Trudeau told reporters. So, if passed, this freeze on handguns is expected to come into force in the fall. Canada's public safety minister tabled. Okay, let me stop for a second. This is the part that's interesting to me. Listen to this. If passed, the freeze on handguns is expected to come into force in the autumn. Canada's public safety minister has tabled regulatory amendments in Parliament to ensure it can be implemented swiftly, according to a ministry statement. Read into that what you wish, but yeah, they're going to make sure they're going to pass this thing and wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. It's going to be right out there and you won't be able to import or buy guns. The new legislation, Bill C-21, also proposes taking away firearm licenses of those involved in acts of domestic violence or criminal harassment, such as stalking. The government will also require long gun magazines to be permanently altered so they can never hold more than five rounds and will ban the sale and transfer of large capacity magazines. Trudeau said his government recognizes that most Canadians who own guns are responsible, but the level of gun violence is unacceptable. This is a concrete and real national measure to long That doesn't read right. This is a concrete and real measure to long way towards keeping Canadians safe, Trudeau said. I think I've got a cut and paste issue there. These new issues are assured of passing in Canada's parliament as the ruling Liberals and leftist opposition New Democrats have enough votes to do so. So, yeah, he's wasting no time. He is getting in there, proposing the legislation. They're going to push it through. They're going to have some amendments that make it quick to implement. And you know, I don't know how many guns are in Canada currently. I don't know what the per capita rate of guns is, but I'm guessing there's a reasonable amount of guns in Canada. I mean, there is a lot of wilderness in Canada, so there's a lot of hunting. There's a lot of sports. There's people that want to protect themselves with guns. And this is an interesting story. I mean, Justin Trudeau, not the most popular guy in Canada these days. And after his handling of the trucker situation, a lot of people thought that was just straight up unconstitutional how he handled that. And now he's making this move, regardless of how you feel about guns, pro or con, just the fact that he's moving so aggressively, so quickly regarding this, and they are willing to change amendments about how the thing would be put in place if it passes is pretty remarkable. So we're going to keep an eye on this. I'm going to try to get some people on to speak to this. And some of the folks that we've talked to in the past about the trucker situation and other situations in Canada might be able to give us further information on this, but we'll keep an eye on it. It's interesting. It's not surprising. It's just happening very quickly. This is TNT. We'll be right back.
Delivering the facts.
Source I can trust.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, folks, in this segment of the show today, we're going to be speaking with Alicia Cashman. She is a former news reporter and radio disc jockey in British Columbia, and she contracted Lyme disease I guess in the early to mid 2000s, her dog got Lyme disease, and then she and her husband got Lyme disease. And we're going to find out a lot about Lyme disease today. I admit I don't know a lot about it. Of course, I've heard about it a lot, but I don't know in detail what all this is. I was trying to study up yesterday and get on top of this. So Alicia, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. And so first of all, let's just get everybody up to date. So briefly tell us about you and your husband and the dog, when this happened, when you contracted it, and what happened after that.
Sure. Well, firstly, we've been in Wisconsin, and that's where we became infected. We're Iowans originally. I had never even seen a tick. I couldn't even describe what one looked like until we moved here to Wisconsin. We're now fifth in the nation for Lyme disease. And yeah, our dog got infected first. Actually, testing for animals is a lot better than for humans. And it just got picked up on a yearly test. And that was my first acknowledgement or knowledge of the disease. My veterinarian was really quite concerned, which I find funny because I think veterinarians are actually far more educated on this than regular GPs are. And he wanted to put my dog, who was asymptomatic, which just means he didn't have any symptoms, he was healthier than a horse, wanted to put him on over a month's worth of antibiotics, which is more they put more than they put humans on. So he understood the severity of it. And I remember something distinctly that he told me that almost was prophetic. He said, "Alicia, Lyme is the tip of the spear. It's just the rock star that we know by name. There's stuff that we haven't even named yet. Ticks are like nature's nasty hypodermic needle, and they infect you with numerous things simultaneously. They can react things that are latent within you." And boy, everything he said, our journey has been a long one. It's been way over 10 years. We were in 5 years of pretty intense treatment. I'd like to say that we're on the side of health, but with this, you can relapse, which we have numerous times, requiring stints of treatment. And that's kind of the polarization in the medical community, is that mainstream medicine doesn't want to admit this fact of reality, that this is relapsing in nature. And that's really kind of the crux of the politicalization of it, is just this argument of persistence, or is it an acute infection? And I believe they're both. I believe I talk to neighbors all the time that get an acute case, they get treatment, and then they're good to go. And then there's people like my husband and I who languish and go undiagnosed, untreated for years, and then we relapse periodically. So that's kind of the big global picture, but there's a lot of details in there too.
Okay. So Lyme disease, at least in my mind, I kind of remember perhaps talk about it in the late 80s to early 90s. Now it's becoming more of a common subject. Just being on your website, I started reading, you know, and seeing these lists of, like, you know, famous people who have it, like Daryl Hall and John Oates, the singers, like supposedly they have it. And the singer, the pop star from Canada. Anyway, a lot of people have it. The reason this is also interesting to me is a friend of my wife's, her family just came back from overseas, and I asked my wife last night if she could remember the details, but anyway, our friend got bitten by a tick overseas, and they got tested for Lyme disease, and I think we got to get more details, because they're saying, well, yeah, I think that the tick showed the presence of the bacteria, but now she doesn't have it or something. I've got to get more details, but this just happened. Like in the last couple of weeks, I found this story out, and what you're telling me, and I guess what I'm gathering in my like 24 hours of trying to catch up on this, is that if the tick does have the bacteria in it, I mean, you have to move on it ASAP to knock it out, because then it moves into the rest of the body and can cause this whole litany of issues.
Correct. And that's the problem, is Even though this thing has been going on for 40 years, doctors still take this doomsday wait and see approach, which is just killing people. And if they could get diagnosed quickly, get treatment quickly, there usually isn't a problem, although there's caveats to that as well, because so much of this, you know, you'd think that we would be further along in the game on this, like you said, in the 70s, late 70s. Pauli Murray out of Connecticut is the one that looked around and said, geez, every single person in my neighborhood is sick, and we've got all these kids with juvenile arthritis. What's going on? And due to her efforts, you know, and you got to applaud this woman. She's calling the state, you know, they're sending people. And that was really kind of the rolling out of the barrel of monkeys, if you will. At first, they thought it was a virus. No, it's not. It's a bacterium. And then from there, it's just kind of honestly stagnated. You know, I just read an article about, you know, hopeful, good points of 10 signs of recent progress. And I read it and I thought, oh, I am so, I am so critical anymore of this, because, I mean, we really should be further along. And you're right. This is becoming a global problem. You want to talk about a pandemic. And getting back to my story, the interesting point that I like to stress is I believe strongly this is sexually transmitted. Strongly. There's a lot of science to indicate that. But just like you said a moment ago, you can take a tick, you can test it, you can find the ingredients in it. But then doctors will say, well, that doesn't mean that they infected you. Okay, well, that's true. But knowing how bad this is, why would you want to play Russian roulette with this? Why wouldn't you just, you know, look, a couple weeks of a couple different antibiotics, and I do have a problem with their monotherapy of doxycycline. It's a great frontline drug. It works against Rocky Mountain spotted fever and numerous other tick-borne infections, but it is not the gold bullet to cure this thing. In fact, there's research out of New Haven that shows that when you give people doxy, it throws the spirochete into a different form. And that's another thing that is hotly contested and debated, is that this is a polymicrobial pleomorphic organism. And that's, those are just big words for, usually we have more than one thing. And the organism of Lyme and numerous other bacteria, by the way, they shapeshift. Mm-hmm. So they're stealth organisms. They feel threatened by your immune system. If you hit it with herbs, if you hit it with antibiotics, it immediately changes shape to go cloaked in your body. And it has an affinity for your immunoprivileged sites, your brain, your spinal column, your synovial fluid, places that are very hard for antibiotics and antimicrobials to get into. So you have to be very savvy about how you treat this. Just throwing one drug, I mean, we all heard about antibiotic resistance, right? Why on earth would you throw one drug at this? That's just asinine. So there's a lot of problems, very rudimentary problems, that until we get to an agreement, and that's the thing, is why can't we come to some sort of an agreement here? It is a highly contested, highly politicized illness, a lot like COVID, actually. And I've actually written an article comparing the two, because they're the same patent owners, the same people behind the scenes. I call them the cabal. Mm-hmm. They run the show. And of course, for decades, Lyme patients were called tinfoil hat wearing nut jobs. And yet now that everybody's kind of gone through COVID, or I should say we're still going through COVID, hopefully some things have come to light that have shown that things are not as they seem.
Alicia, you use the word patent holder. And so we're going to go down that path, and nothing surprises me these days. But first of all, let's just talk about the prevalence of Lyme disease. So talk about how many people have this, or what we're calling Lyme disease, which seems to be this blanket name for a whole lot of different things.
So I've written an article that says why we should care about Lyme disease, a colorful tale of government conflicts of interest, probable bioweaponization, and pathogen complexity. I tried to boil down into a title 40 years of mayhem that have left people virtually destitute. I know people that are homeless because of this. Mm-hmm. And it just, you know, the band plays on. I'm going to borrow that phrase, that title, because it's true. And so the people that, ask me your question. I know you said patent holders, but you asked about numbers. Okay.
Yeah. So, just so people understand how prevalent this is, because I don't think that people, I didn't.
Right. So the latest numbers on this is like 475,000 cases per year of people like your friend who are acutely infected, diagnosed immediately. That's a yearly of just people getting it. It doesn't count people like me, my husband, and virtually everyone I work with that has chronic infection. So let's just estimate 500,000 new people every year contracting Lyme and or other, and I call it MSIDS. I borrow that from Dr. Horowitz out east. It stands for multi-systemic infectious disease syndrome. Some people call it Lyme and company, but basically it includes Lyme, Babesia, Bartonella, Ehrlichiosis, all these tick viruses, Rocky Mountain spotted fever. Now we've got Borrelia mayonii. And they just keep adding to the list. The last I counted, there were 19 infections that ticks can spread directly. I also believe that a tick bite can serve as a trigger, a lot like vaccines can serve mm-hmm. as triggers to set off a cytokine cascade within the body where it becomes overwhelmed. And all of a sudden now you've got mold issues, you've got mast cell issues, you've got food allergies and blah, 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 blah. So it really gets ugly fast and it's overwhelming the immune system. And the scary thing about this is it looks different on every individual. That's another thing. We don't fit into Fauci's randomized controlled trials of thousands of people looking identical. No, we're like case studies. And so they hardly sniff at us scientifically because not a case study. But that's kind of how you have to approach this, because even my husband and I were probably infected with the exact same strains. Our symptoms were very, very different. All mm-hmm. of my initial symptoms were gynecological. I must emphasize that, gynecological, but I didn't know. I was completely in the dark. Nobody ever broached that topic. People look at you like you're crazy, but let's just talk about this organism for a minute. If you look at it under a dark field microscopy, it's a spiral shaped corkscrewed. It works faster than your blood cells. It can burrow into virtually any organ in your body. Why can't it go anywhere in, you know, your body, anywhere? Ovaries. I mean, my first symptom was I was hunched over like an old woman with ovarian pain. Finally went in for like an MRI and they said, you've got two deflating cysts. I said, well, it feels like someone put a shotgun at me. And just, I mean, the pain, I cannot even describe the pain. But I'm not alone. I go online, I Google it, and there are many other women out there struggling. They find out, oh, I've got a Lyme diagnosis. And then they start treating and the symptoms improve. So I always tell people the proof is in the pudding. You cannot deny the treatment helps you. Now, sometimes you get worse. That's called a Herxheimer reaction. So when people treated syphilis, that was what they discovered is... because it's this stealthy organism, it cloaks itself. Finally, when you give it something to kill it, now you've got this dead debris floating around. And the immune system recognizes, oh, you've got a black hat on, you're bad, I'm coming after you. And so now you've got all this inflammation and pain and fatigue. My poor husband could about fall asleep standing up, the fatigue. And mm-hmm. that's a very common symptom, excruciating fatigue. He'd fall asleep at the wheel.
So the ticks, another thing that I saw on your website, which, because I grew up on a farm and like I'm used to ticks, luckily have not had too many, but there was an area that you were talking about where in one of your videos or something. Anyway, the point being is that some of these ticks are so small, you have to actually look for them. And when I'm thinking of ticks, I'm thinking of something that I can see on my body typically. Right. But you're saying some of these could be so small that you have to hunt them down. And you know what? I tell you what, before we move into that segment, I see that we're coming up on the break, but we're going to return to the size of these ticks and how we can try to avoid encountering them. I'm speaking with Alicia Cashman. We're talking about Lyme disease. We're talking about its carrier agent. You're listening to TNT. We'll be right back.
Patrick Henningsen on TNT Radio.
No one has undermined the confidence of Western mainstream media institutions more than those institutions themselves, with the sheer volume of fake news and hoaxes and other disinformation that they pump out on literally a daily basis. But the difference between their fake news and disinformation, I'm talking about the mainstream media, the other major source of fake news, propaganda, and disinformation is, of course, our governments. The only difference between their fake news and misinformation and those that they're accusing bloggers of, which they don't have any actual examples to cite, just that they don't like the viewpoint. They don't like the vantage point of independent media. And their talking points mirror that of the Russian state. So therefore, they must all be in league with each other. What a ridiculous, childish analysis that is.
Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Nearly every day, we hear dire predictions about climate change from the media establishment, Hollywood, and politicians. They tell us that the world is coming to an end because normal human activity is raising the temperature to dangerous levels. To avoid a hellish apocalypse, they warn us we must immediately change our lifestyles and our very way of life. But are these sensational claims based on solid empirical science? Do the facts line up with the hype? Well, an increasing number of scientists are becoming skeptical. We covered what many of these scientists had to say in our first groundbreaking film, Climate Hustle. From overhyped claims about severe weather events, temperatures, rising sea levels, and even disappearing polar bears, Climate Hustle peeled back the hype and looked at the facts, facts that simply don't add up to any reason for alarm. So this begs the questions. Why would those claiming a global warming catastrophe spread a false narrative? What would motivate them? Why would they try to hustle you? Are they trying to control the climate or you? Well, those are the questions we're going to explore in this film. And the answers may shock you. Order your DVD, Blu-ray, or digital copy today of Climate Hustle 2.
To find out more, go to climatehustle2.com.
One in six Australian children are living in poverty and urgently need help. Children like 8-year-old Anna, who miss out on so much and struggle to keep up in class. She may never catch up. No matter how hard she tries, the impacts of poverty mean her best just isn't enough. Help children like Anna access extra learning support so they can break the cycle of poverty. Please make a tax-deductible donation by June 30. Search the Smith family now.
This is today's News Talk and the Voice of Freedom, TNT Radio.
Hello, friends. You're listening to Deprogram. I am your host, Michael Parker. I'm speaking with Alicia Cashman. We're talking about Lyme disease. She has a website, which is the Madison Area Lyme Support Group.com. So you can get more information there. It's a great website. And Alicia, what we were talking about right before the break is, so if the carrier agent is these ticks and they can vary in size, is it a whole family of ticks? Is it a single type of tick? Tell me about the ticks.
Okay, before we go into the ticks, I just want to say that they have found the Borrelia organism in mosquitoes. There are patients that swear that they got infected after a mosquito bite. We know that spiders, anything that can share fluids with you by biting you is suspect. And whether, you know, and this is where people quibble, but remember now there's a lot of other infections at play here. And people give it different names. Dr. Perrone calls them crypto infections, you know, MSIDS, Lyme and Company, whatever you want to call it. And mainstream medicine is looking this as a mono one, and you can't, and that's why we're not getting help. And before I move on and forget it, I just want to deal with your friend who got bit overseas. See, these ticks are different, but I don't want to put too much emphasis on that because migrating birds are taking ticks and dropping them virtually everywhere. They're finding tropical ticks up in Ontario. They're finding Canadian ticks down in the tropics, and they all carry different crud. They're biting animals, reptiles included, and these deer, fox, lizards, they're all crossing state borders. And so I always just want to scream when I hear of some poor sucker who goes in, they've got telltale symptoms, and the doctor tells them, oh, you can't have Lyme. It's not here. It doesn't exist here. And we've got to get beyond this type of infantile thinking, because until you tell the deer that they can't cross the state border, the migrating bird that they can't fly from Mexico to Ontario, then don't talk to me about that. But this is what's happening. This is the problem. So I just wanted to add the caveat that I believe there's more than ticks. Okay. I just do. I just talked about sexual transmission, talked about other insects, but yeah, ticks are the main vector of Lyme.
Okay. Point taken. And what I would say to these doctors who are saying, well, it's not here. I would say two words: invasive species. It's we have all kinds, plants, animals, insects, all across North America and in every country, on the planet. So that's ridiculous to say that something like this is not here.
Well, and then if you take into the fact that the other elephant in the room that nobody wants to touch with a 10-foot pole is our own government, and this is in the book Bitten by Chris Newby, our own government has taken boxes of infected ticks, kicked them out of airplanes over Cuba and whatnot, and probably other places. The discoverer of Lyme, Willy Bergdorfer, was a bioweapons researcher in Montana. He force-fed ticks different pathogens. They shared those with different labs, and we know about lab sharing, right? We know that some bad things can happen when we share things with each other. Things escape, things get out. And if you read Lab 257, you find out that the safety of that lab was really, it was becoming dilapidated. Stuff was in and out, you know, and insects are very small. But coming back to the tick, much like testing, okay, I'm going to compare those two things. So everybody puts so much emphasis on testing. And in a real world, if I get staph, if I get strep, and I go in and I get a definitive test, that's sweet, right? We all like that. We all have that in us. We want a piece of paper that says we're infected and now we get this drug. Okay, this disease that I'm talking about here does not fit into that paradigm. We got to quit shoving something into a box. This is more like Pandora's box, where just stuff keeps crawling out, stuff that we don't even know. And so the tick, I always tell people this, look, no tick is a good tick. They all bite you. They all have these mouth parts that drill into your body and they exchange fluid with you. Whatever they just bit before you has a very good chance of going into you. Mm-hmm. And then when it is done with you, it might go to someone else and we're sharing crud. So it's really frustrating because people don't talk about that, but that's a problem. You know, our own government has a part in this and they won't come clean. And frankly, I think that's why we've stagnated.
Okay. So let me make sure nothing surprises me anymore, but let me see if I get what you're saying here. Is you believe that Lyme disease was a created disease and carried by parasites in the form of ticks intentionally?
Well, we know that Otzi the Iceman had Borrelia in his body. I do believe that, like the bat virus, if you will, if it's from bats, who knows? I believe that these things exist in nature. Yes, they exist, but is it the same? That's what we don't quite know. I think that, you know, we keep finding other strains as well. And I have to point out with testing, the current two-tiered CDC testing, everyone knows, is a complete joke, much like COVID testing. But it's in the reverse. If you take a COVID test, you're almost going to get a positive. It's like 95% false positive. Well, with Lyme, it's just the opposite. It's like a 95% false negative. So people are infected, but testing positive, being sent home with a false sense of security. And then they get symptoms, or they can get symptoms. There's some that get by and don't. They get symptoms. Then they go in and they're like, well, you tested negative. I had a patient call me. She knew she had Lyme. And the doctor's like, nope. She kept going in. She tested negative 3 times. Finally, she tested positive. But by then, you know, like you just discussed, this stuff has kind of a refrigeration time. If you don't get on it right away, good luck. It embeds, it gets in your brain. Now you've just made this thing much worse than it had to be. And I have to tell a little story here because it's very, very illustrative of this fact. So I know of a Lyme doctor who actually, Igenix, a testing, a CLIA certified lab, he came to speak to my little support group, which I was really impressed by, that some guy would fly all the way from California to Wisconsin just to talk to a bunch of sick people, but they did. And he told the story of a little girl who went out at, 10 o'clock in the morning, got bit by a tick right above her eye, okay, kind of right above her eyebrow, and within 4 to 6 hours, could not walk, could not talk. 4 to 6. And yet we're told, oh, you got all the time in the world. You know, you go on the CDC website, it's like 48 to 72 hours. Oh, the easy, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, seriously, it makes you want to scream because no, this is as serious as a heart attack. Now you may be a lucky one and that doesn't happen to you, but what if you're the sorry sucker who does? What if you don't fit into that box? And everybody I work with, None of us fit in the box, unless it's Pandora's. Mm-hmm.
When you mentioned this little girl who got bitten above the eye, I mean, the first thing that I think of when you're saying that is like, well, that's very close to the brain and the central nervous system. So that, I don't know, I'm not a doctor, but that's just the first thing that went through my mind. So it doesn't surprise me that she had an adverse effect so quickly. Another thing that's interesting to me that you brought up was veterinarians seem to take this more seriously than doctors. Well, in the case of COVID, that was the same because some of the best work initially was kind of coming from veterinarians, and people would be making fun of them. Ah, well, you know, he's not a doctor, he's a veterinarian. But the fact is, I mean, we're all biological creatures with similar mechanics. So I don't know. Right now, I'm very disappointed in the medical community at large. Just a quick aside, my dad, 84 years old, immunocompromised. His girlfriend that lives with him was diagnosed with COVID last week, and the doctors in their area sent her home. Just said, well, you know, we can't do anything about it, and sent him home. And so now my dad's got COVID as well. And it's like, I don't know at what point the medical community is going to accept the responsibility for not doing the right thing in the case of COVID and in the case of Lyme disease, but there's going to have to be a reckoning because they are failing.
So the reason that I'm here talking with you today is due to a group of doctors who split off, formed their own group. They're called ILADS, International Lyme Disease and Associated, International Lyme and Associated Disease Society. There we go. They split off from the IDSA, which is the Infectious Disease Society of America, because they could see they were not moving forward here. There was a paradigm, and you had to fit into this paradigm. So these doctors split off. They have their own conferences. I've been to them. They're very well done. These are some of the most astute doctors, caring, educated people, but they are ostracized by their own colleagues, you know, just like we see now with COVID. And I have to give a plug for ivermectin here. My husband and I took ivermectin back in the day when we had Lyme, because it is a dewormer, if you will. And a lot of people don't know that ticks also transmit worms. And for some people, that can be kind of the defining marquee thing, that once they deal with those worms, they start improving. So we added that to our regimen. We did some Albenza, some Reese's pinworm med, and a whole bevy of stuff. And we didn't really have any significant change or improvement, but a lot of people do. So we had already taken ivermectin, but so our main primary doctor is a Lyme literate doctor trained by ILADS. And I read an article, in fact, I posted it. It said an independent doctor could save your life. I could not agree more. Mm-hmm. I think that we're coming to a day where doctors who take the Hippocratic Oath seriously have got to decide, what am I in this for? Am I truly called into this? Am I truly here to help people? Or am I just a cog in a system? Because frankly, you are absolutely right. Mainstream medicine is failing. No, it's failed.
Yeah,
and
agreed.
In my mind, when I talk to patients and I tell them, look, I'm going to tell you some stuff you're not going to like, some stuff that's going to go against everything you feel. One, if you want true help, you got to get out of mainstream medicine. That doesn't mean you can't go see the cardiologist, or if you got some special, you need some special care. That's when they come in. But try to at least find a Lyme-friendly doctor who won't gaslight you when you go in, because these poor patients are yelled at, belittled, told they're nuts, given an antidepressant rather than antimicrobials for something that would really help them improve. And so find a Lyme-literate doctor. People can contact me for that information. They can contact ILADS directly. State support groups are a fantastic resource because they're boots on the ground. I know every single one of the Lyme literate doctors here in Wisconsin. I know kind of their fees. I know their approach. And that's the other thing. These doctors all kind of have a little different take on it. And you have to find one that you kind of jive with. And a lot of times insurance doesn't cover this. So my husband and I were paying completely out of pocket. I mean, I think I estimated, and this is a while back now, so it would be more. It was $15,000 per person per year. Yeah. So $30,000 for the two of us per year. I think I estimated, you know, easily $200,000, if not more, and ongoing, because what you find is, you know, this is way more involved than just getting an antimicrobial. This is doing bloods to find out what you're deficient in, and supplementing and changing your diet, and all this stuff costs money. And so, but if you want to save time and money, don't mess around with mainstream medicine unless you really have to. They won't help you, and they will probably abuse you. And this has been my experience over and over and over and over again.
I'm speaking with Alicia Cashman. We're talking about Lyme disease. We're talking about the medical profession, which is failing us. I don't know how much longer it's going to take for people to recognize this. And then we have insurance companies compounding the situation. And perhaps that is also making an influence on these doctors, what they will prescribe or not prescribe. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to TNT. I am Michael Parker. This is Deprogram. We'll be right back.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
Many Democrats have been pushing to make gun control a central feature of the midterm elections. But politicising the recent tragic mass school shooting won't address the underlying cultural and economic issues behind the increase in mass shootings in recent years. Tragically, several hundred Americans now die each year in mass shootings, but at least hundreds of thousands have died from a criminally negligent policy response to COVID-19, including denial of early treatment and injury from mandated jabs. If President Biden continues to push net zero emissions, many millions of Americans will die prematurely in poverty. If the Democrats were truly concerned about saving lives, they would focus on the leading causes of excess deaths, which includes overdose deaths from drugs, including fentanyl, which claimed more than 100,000 Americans last year. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
One kind thing, like giving us the clothes you don't wear anymore,
gets me a wheelchair and my independence back.
One kind thing, like raising money with a bake sale,
gives us comfort, food, and a warm smile after floods destroyed our home.
One kind thing, like challenging yourself to a sponsored cycle,
helps me sleep soundly, knowing my children have clean drinking water.
Choose your one kind thing and help change someone's world. Search British Red Cross today.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
The Security Service of Ukraine, known as the SBU, is the successor of the Ukrainian branch of the Soviet KGB and was created after the Declaration of Independence of Ukraine in 1991. The UNHCR and Human Rights Watch have accused the SBU of systematically torturing political opponents and Ukrainian dissidents with impunity. The UNHCR found that in 2016 that arbitrary detention, enforced disappearances, torture and ill treatment of such conflict-related detainees were common practice of SBU. Yevhan Karas, the founder of the infamous neo-Nazi C-14 unit, has detailed the close relationship his gang and other extreme right factions have had with the SBU.
Bad government, climate change alarmists, vaccine mandates. The threats to your freedom are many, but that's where we can help.
Hear more truths.
TNT Radio.
All the time.
Our truth shall set you free. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I am speaking with Alicia Cashman. We're talking about Lyme disease. We're talking about the medical community. And Alicia, when I hear you tell these stories, it reminds me of how they've kind of acted regarding autoimmune diseases, Morgellons, whatever that turns out to be or not to be. But these cases where they're just addressing the patient by saying, well, you know what, you probably have some kind of a mental issue, so we're going to give you a antidepressant or something. It's just, it's not scientific. It's not helping people. And it's super depressing and not what they're supposed to do.
You know, and a story to kind of lay that out is I was connected when I was on LinkedIn, which was a wonderful forum to meet researchers and doctors from around the world until I got kicked off for simply all I did was I posted the Danish mask study saying that masks didn't work. And I feel it's important that I post stuff about COVID and treatments to patients because they are immunocompromised, much like you said your father was. And they're worried. They're frightened. Mainstream media is really just, I call it fear porn. And so yes, patients are frightened. And I want them to be armed with knowledge so that they understand that there is help. And just rewinding a moment to ivermectin. So I've had COVID twice. I don't know what strains they were. I never got tested because I think the test is an absolute joke and I don't want that thing up my nose. In fact, I had some cancer removed from my face and I drove 2 hours to do a sputum test so I didn't have to have the thing poked up my nose.
Yeah.
I had to spit in a little vial, but anyway, so we took ivermectin because our independent doctor is Lyme literate. He had read Dr. Corey's research, you know, FLACC, F-L-C-C-C. You can go onto their website. They've done phenomenal work. There's now data from 5 different countries promoting the use of ivermectin, both prophylactically, early treatment, mid-treatment, even people on vents on their way out. They have saved their lives. I can speak personally for 2 people that I, you know, me and my husband. And I can tell you that within one dose, and we're talking a pill so small that when it pops out of the little container, if it flies across the floor, you can't find it. It is so small, so safe. Used to be cheap until now the demand has driven the price up, but they use this over the counter in Africa. And so, you know, the fact that the media came out and attacked Joe Rogan and came out with this whole dewormer thing. Is it a dewormer? Yes, it is, but has it been
amongst many things?
Yeah. Has it been used in people for decades and decades? Is it on the WHO essential list of medicines? Yes. And so
it's a wide spectrum antiviral.
Yes, which they discovered, and hallelujah for it. I believe that it works against many viruses, not just COVID. And I think, and now they're finding that it has anti-cancer attributes. So of course, nobody wants this genie out of the bottle, because once it comes out, there's no pushing it back down. So they want to vilify this drug at all costs. And yet it is very safe and it is very effective. So I just wanted to add that, because we've taken it three times now, once with Lyme for worms and twice with COVID, and it turned us around within virtually a day. One day.
I actually got a text from a friend this morning saying that, you know, she took ivermectin and it didn't help her because she's getting over COVID, which may be. I mean, I don't know that all things help all people, but I do own it myself. I own HCQ and I own ivermectin, and knock on wood, I have not had COVID, but I have been following the COVID story since before they were calling it COVID here in the US. And I don't know, I want to have it on hand in the case that me or a member of my family comes down with it. And I don't see any downside to trying it. If I suddenly have COVID, man, I'm gonna take everything that I can get my hands on that seems reasonable to try to deal with it.
And so I have to add to that, you know, I don't want to make COVID out to be the only end all. Just like with Lyme, this is kind of a whole systems approach, multi-prongs. And that's the other thing that mainstream medicine just doesn't want to admit or understand, or because here's why. It takes a lot to uncover this. And my first Lyme appointment with a Lyme literate doctor was 90 minutes. I filled out a veritable stack of paperwork like an encyclopedia going back to infancy, because they're trying to discern, did she get this congenitally? Or did she have an event where she noticed a tick bite, blah, blah, blah. So unraveling COVID is just like any other disease. We've got to get away from this one germ, one drug. No, the body is complicated. There's a lot of crap out there, and our bodies are typically able to handle it, just like viruses, right?
Right.
But one thing I notice about Lyme patients is they have trouble with Epstein-Barr. They have trouble with the herpes viruses. They have trouble with COVID. And it's because their immune systems are already in a war. Mm-hmm. And add a vaccine to that mix, now you've got a war on steroids, because the body can't handle all of that. I've sat across the table from 20-somethings who had their Lyme under control. They were doing great. They were at school. They had a job. They were living on independent. They went and got a standard flu shot, and that was it. Curtains. Lyme symptoms come flooding back. They're sicker than hell. And they got to move back home with mom and dad, quit their job, quit school. And they're standing there or sitting there across the table from me with mom crying. That's what I face. So when I talk to people, Lyme patients in particular, or autoimmune people, anybody struggling with a pre-existing condition, I have a real problem with this idea that it's a one size fits all. Everybody take the jab. Everybody take this drug. No, 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 no. Slow way down. We're way more complex, and you got to listen to me and study me and give it some time. And, you know, the fact that they're pushing this stuff so quickly, it hasn't been adequately tested. On the other hand, ivermectin has been used for decades.
Right.
So that tells you right there, there's something going on. Something going on.
Agreed. So in our remaining 6 or 7 minutes, I want to return to just giving people as much information as we can in this time remaining about Lyme. Now, one thing, you call it MSIDS, which is the Multiple Systemic Infectious Disease Syndrome. So when people hear Lyme disease, what they're really hearing is an entire litany of potential illnesses related to whatever this thing is. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. Now, there are people who can go get a tick bite and just have Lyme. That's true. In fact, when I talked with one of the most experienced Lyme doctors in Wisconsin, he's no longer with us, but he actually treated this before it had a name. He called it a rickettsial type illness. And he was treating people, and he told me, Alicia, when I treated people back in the 70s, this is before, again, it had a name, he said, I found that cases resolved within a couple months to a year at the outside. He said, this is no longer true. This takes a minimum. If you have it kind of like I did, okay, where you go undiagnosed for a while and it's embedded, it's going to take you years of treatment. And he said at least 3. In my case, it was 5. And my husband as well. And then we've relapsed now 3 times, requiring a couple months of treatment. So yeah, this thing is not just Lyme. Typically, nobody I work with works with has just Lyme. It does happen, but they are the acute cases. And that's what everybody's talking about, is the acute cases. They're not talking about the people that languish for years, decades even, and then finally get diagnosed. They're a different ballgame altogether. You can't compare.
So potentially there are a lot more people in the world that have Lyme disease that don't even know it.
Oh, I walk around and I kind of can notice the signs now. And, you know, people will blame, you know, and I don't want to make everything Lyme, although that same doctor I just spoke about, he had a phrase, a quote that I've never forgotten. He said, yes, not everything's Lyme, but Lyme can be anything. Mm-hmm. And that stuck with me. There's another quote by Dr. Jemsek. You either have 25 diseases or you have Lyme. Mm-hmm. I love that because it does look like we're hypochondriacs, because I've got joint pain, it's in my shoulder, and then now a week later it's in my knee, and I've got fatigue so bad, and I've got these headaches, and my heart's wigging out, and that's what we sound like. And then you add the Morgellons people into the mix, and it sounds even crazier, because they get these, you know, colored filaments coming out of their skin, and people look at them like, oh, you're nuts. No. In fact, they've related it to spirochetal illness, for sure. I think other pathogens are involved there too. And a big one that I think that doesn't get enough airplay is Bartonella. If you look up the research on Bartonella and kind of the word on the street, people will say, oh, the body can handle it. You know, you might be sick for a little bit and then, you know, you'll overcome it. Well, those aren't the people I'm seeing. I'm seeing sick, sick people. I just spoke with a researcher up in Minneapolis, and they're doing research connecting Bartonella with cancer. So it's serious, serious stuff.
All right. Well, we've got about 2 minutes left. So Alicia, I want you to tell people where they can find all of your websites, your social media, any resources that you can recommend to people that want to know more about Lyme disease.
Well, I'm not very politically correct, as you can tell. And so
that's all right. We already social. fair enough. I get that.
I don't do the social media thing because I would be kicked off in a minute. I tried LinkedIn and loved it while it lasted, but good riddance. If they won't allow people free speech, I don't want any part of you.
I'm not a big fan of LinkedIn for those reasons.
Yeah. My website is probably a great place to start. There is a tab at the top that says, about contact. You can click that. It'll give you my email. I tell people, contact me by email. If you're really bad, you're a really tough case or whatever, I field phone calls. I've helped people in Slovenia, Africa, India. It's crazy. When I look at the people who look at my website, they're from other countries. So the desperation is very real. And I don't think people are getting straight answers. So You can type words in my search bar. Like, let's just say that you want to know more about tick prevention. Just type in tick prevention and you can learn about all the different pesticides, what you can do in your yard, how you can take care of your pets, blah, blah, blah. So that'd be a great place to start. And then there's also under there a resource, how to, you know, find a Lyme support group. So let's say you're in California. I would go to that. I would find a local support group and I would go or contact the leader, find out their doctors and get true help.
All right.
Lasting help.
Alicia, thank you so much. We will have you back because we barely scratched the surface on this and there's a lot more to talk about and you clearly know a lot. So Alicia Cashman, thank you so much for being with us. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after the hour to speak with Mitchell Gerber about the Falun Gong and the horrors that are happening in China. We'll be right back.